Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey, everybody. If you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace, because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store, whether you sell physical, digital, or service products. Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now, and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF, and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And that's Stuff You Should Know, the podcast. The two of us together with a couple of mics. Mm-hmm. And our voices.
You know what I've been singing all day, of course.
Panama.
Dude, over and over. And I just whistled it, and Jerry was like, you know, I got that stuck in my head.
Yeah. When we were growing up, my sister was singing it, and I realized that she was singing Turn and Run. I'm like, what? She's like, that song, that Van Halen song. Like, don't be an idiot.
She thought that's what they were saying?
Yeah.
That's so interesting, because there's so many misinterpreted song lyrics famously over the years, but I never have heard Panama as being one of them.
Yeah, especially since the song is named Panama.
Yeah.
You know?
Parentheses, Turn and Run.
Right. Maybe they were talking about the people who were working on the early French effort to build a canal in Panama.
Yeah. Boy, that didn't go over so well. We'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
Spoiler, the French didn't build the Panama Canal.
I thought we were going to get to it right now.
No? All right.
Do you want to talk about Da Gama? Da Balboa? Which one was George Costanza's favorite explorer? Was it Da Gama or Balboa?
Oh, man.
It was one of the two.
I think Da Gama.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
That was a funny conversation, though. Balboa back in the day was wandering around in a region called Darien, and he summited a peak there and was like, holy cow, if I look this away, I see the Pacific Ocean, mm-hmm. and if I look at that away, I see the Atlantic Ocean.
Or the Caribbean.
And the only thing between these two big bodies of water is this little isthmus of land.
Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of trouble with that word.
That's okay. Just say strip.
Okay.
So this strip of land here is the only thing in between, and we should figure out a way to use this as a thoroughfare.
Yeah, because this is it.
This connects the world.
It does, exactly. At the time, the Spanish were trying to trade with the Chinese,
yeah.
and were doing a pretty good job of it in the Philippines, and the best way to get to that was to come across the Atlantic and go into the Pacific.
That's right.
It worked very, very well.
Yeah.
And the idea of just having a place where you could go straight through rather than go all the way down South America and then back up,
man,
it was just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
It's like you said, it opened up the world. This guy got it immediately. The problem was it would take about 400 more years before anyone finally got around to completing it successfully.
Well, yeah, and forget the rest of the world. The United States just like, hey, I want to ship this by boat from New York to San Francisco. How can I do that? I can just like kind of sneak around Florida, right? Nope. Blocked.
Right.
Well, then what do I got to do? You got to go 8,000 miles, nautical miles, around South America to get to California.
Right. Or, you know, when Yumi and I were in Nicaragua, we were in a town
yeah.
that in the 19th century was a way station for minor 49ers going on to California.
Oh, yeah.
And they would sail on to Nicaragua, take a train, and then ship out from Nicaragua up to California.
Except the handful that was like, I think I might just kick it here in
Nicaragua. Exactly, yeah.
I bet you there were some dudes that did that.
Oh, definitely, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a continent in the way, and the idea that it was just this little narrow strip of land.
I know.
That made a lot of people say, this is the place to be. in the 18th century, the Scottish showed up.
Yeah.
They tried to establish an outpost, failed spectacularly.
Yeah.
There's a great section in 1493 about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The Spanish were there. The French were there. They established pretty good outposts there. It was very clear that this little area, which was then part of Colombia, is now present-day Panama, was going to be a hopping spot because there was no thinner portion of the North or South American continents than this one, and everyone needed to figure out a way to get through.
Yeah, and it wasn't as easy as like, hey, let's just dredge all this sand and let the waters meet, because that's not too hard. It's like dense jungle and mountains and the continental divide.
Yeah.
So it's my first thought was like, how hard could it have been? I didn't realize how treacherous that area was.
Yeah, and I think that that Balboa and a lot of people who succeeded him thought the same thing. Like, how hard is it?
Sure.
But it is. Like, that continental divide, that's a tough thing to break through.
That's why they call it a divide.
Yeah, well, that's where two tectonic plates come together and form a mountain range. And, like, you're cutting through not one but two tectonic plates, everybody. Wrap your head around that.
Seriously.
Let's talk about it, because obviously we were successful eventually, but the first attempt was not. And the first attempt was by the French.
Yeah.
Who in the 1820s, I believe, started to undertake what is known as a sea level canal, which is basically they were going to cut their way straight through the Isthmus of Panama.
That's right. And canals were all the rage at the time because of steam technology. So all of a sudden, you didn't have to use the very cool and quaint towpath and have a mule walk alongside of a river or a canal.
Have you ever been on
your little boat? Well, yeah, a lot of them now are like jogging trails and stuff.
Right.
You know? Which, you know, that's great. It makes for good use.
Sure, exactly.
I don't see any mules on them.
No.
These days. But it's great that people can use these towpaths now to, you know,
right.
It's like a nature trail.
Yeah. So the steam technology gave the French the idea that, hey, man, we can build a sea level canal here. Because we can just dig right through it. We have steam. We don't need the mules for the towpaths any longer. All we need is some good steam shovels, and we're going to cut right through this continental divide, right through this jungle. And as a result of this ambition, 20,000 people died.
Yeah, and they were able to, you know, get a little far thanks to the railroad there in Panama. Believe it or not, it was the first railroad in the world to connect both sides of a continent.
Right.
Wasn't very big, but it didn't need to be.
No, right,
which
exactly.
Which is kind of great. But that allowed the French to get in there. They were deciding between Nicaragua and Panama at the time, and they said, like you said, we can do sea level. We don't need these locks.
Yeah, if you look at a map of Nicaragua and look at Panama, like the idea of going through Nicaragua over Panama is just nuts.
Yeah, and we'll explain how the locks work, but it essentially just raises and lowers your ship.
Right, for sure.
In a little, like, bay station of water that's flooded and then drained.
Right.
Actually, that's how a lock works.
So the French organized this thing called the Compagnie Universelle du Canal Interocéanique.
Very nice.
Thank you. And led by a guy named Ferdinand de Lesseps, who had created a sea level canal through the Suez that connected the Mediterranean and the Red Seas. It was a big deal.
Sure.
So they brought him in, and he's like, sure, we'll do another sea level canal. I'm feeling good about this.
Yeah, he's like, I did the Suez Canal with my eyes closed.
Exactly.
Like, I can do this with one arm tied behind my back.
What he didn't realize was that digging through a bunch of sand is not like digging through two tectonic plates.
No.
And a bunch of jungle and malaria. And like I said, 20,000 people died as a result of this. Like, this guy was like, no, we can do it. We can do it. We're going to do a sea level canal. We can do it. And then finally he was like, I don't think we can do this. It was too late.
Yeah.
A lot of people were dead from yellow fever and malaria, from accidents.
It's privately financed, so a lot of people lost a lot of money, too.
Exactly. And this company goes under.
Well, he tried to salvage it, though, first. He tried to hire Gustav Eiffel of the Eiffel Tower fame.
Right.
And said, hey, I think we need those locks after all, and you're good at building big steel things, so can you help? And he was like, of course I can. And then it was too late, though. The business was done.
Right. And they had done a little bit. Well, they had done a lot. Like, they made 11 miles of canal up to that point.
Not bad. It's about a quarter of the way there.
Right. But this was the, when did they start, Chuck? The
1820s? 1820s, yeah.
So, Chuck, as we understand it, they started in the 1820s.
Yeah.
And this thing went bust by 1902, I believe.
Well, that's when Congress, I mean, they were bust before that, but that's when the U.S. stepped in and said, hey, we'll buy your junk.
Oh, I'm sorry, 1888. So in like about 60 years,
yeah,
they had managed to dig 11 miles of canal, build a bunch of buildings. They had a lot of equipment and supplies there.
Sure.
And yeah, the U.S. said, we smell a really, really great opportunity.
Yeah.
And Congress said, let's spend some cash. We're feeling good about things these days. We annexed Hawaii recently,
yeah.
Puerto Rico, Philippines. What else? Why not take over this very ambitious yeah. project? Why, it's the American century by now.
And we can stick it to the French at the same time.
Exactly.
So they did this in 1902 with the one stipulation that said, you know what, you guys have to, Colombia controls Panama right now, and you guys have to work out a deal with them. And we tried, and that failed. So we said, you know what? We're just going to overthrow Colombia then and
right.
give the control to the Panamanians.
Yeah, we supported this Panamanian independence movement and, yeah, threw off the shackles of Colombia. And Colombia's like, what did you just do? Because we gained control of that. We followed that congressional mandate and gained control of this Panama Canal Zone. Basically, the swath that went through Panama
yeah.
was considered American soil thanks to a treaty from, I believe, 1902, the Hay-Bunau-Varilla Treaty, where Panama signed over the canal zone. There was no Spanish translation of this treaty.
Yeah.
So basically the U.S. went in, overthrew Colombian control of Panama, supported Panamanian independence,
yeah.
and then robbed Panama of its canal
Colombia
in one
like,
fell swoop, in like a year.
Yeah. And Colombia's like, I guess we'll just start exporting cocaine and massive
exactly.
amounts.
We'll get you back.
One day. So in the end, they paid about $40 million in 1904 for the assets of this French company, which is a lot of money back then.
Sure.
And about $10 million as this very cheeky article, by the way. Did you notice?
It's
cheeky.
A little.
They offered, she referred to it as alimony of sorts to Panama. $10 million
yeah.
to gain the rights to this canal zone. And basically, hey, we're going to run the show. We're going to finish your canal from the 11-mile mark to the ocean
yeah.
where it belongs.
And like you said, I think there was a certain amount of snub to it, right?
Probably so. But they said, you know what we got to do first, though, is we have to decide on if we can go sea level.
Like, was it just the French were incompetent, or is it really impossible to do sea level?
Yeah, like, we need to do our own due diligence, basically.
Sure.
And they did that, and Theodore Roosevelt chose Chief Engineer John Frank Stevens, and he was like, it's all about the locks, dudes.
Yeah.
If you want a canal here, you're going to have to go over these mountains, not through them.
Right, so here's the thing, and this is just brilliant, because there was another problem with this isthmus. And there's this thing called the Chagres River.
Yeah.
And it is very temperamental.
Yeah.
It was prone to flooding, all sorts of crazy stuff associated with this river. So not only did you have the Continental Divide and the jungle and the malaria to deal with, once you completed it, what were you going to do with this river?
Sure.
Stevens came up with this great idea that you go over the mountains,
mm-hmm.
and you go over the mountains, you kill two birds with one stone by damming the river.
Yeah.
And you create a lake that will carry you over the mountains.
Gatun Lake.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not pronounced correctly.
Think about that. That is one of the most brilliant feats of engineering I've ever heard of.
The Panama Canal?
Yeah, but that specific aspect of it.
Oh, sure.
Damming the river to create a lake so you can go over the mountains.
Yeah.
That's just incredibly beautiful.
The whole thing, too. And at the time, dude, in the early 1900s, it's just like, it's amazing that they could pull
yeah.
this off.
Yeah, because they're all wearing, like, knickers and stuff.
Yeah, it's very, there's some awesome documentaries out there, by the way, you should watch. In fact, there's one, there's one cool, just go to the YouTubes and put in time-lapse Panama Canal.
Oh, yeah?
And it takes you the full route in like a minute and a half.
Nice.
Instead of 8 to 10 hours. And it's kind of neat. You know, the boat goes in and sinks and then, not sinks, but
right.
lowers and then raises. And
yeah.
then it tools along in the lake for a little while and then sinks and lowers and raises. And
yeah, because
boom.
It's like an 8 to 10 hour transit, right?
From deep water to deep water, 8 to 10 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on your boat, I guess.
Once you finally get clearance to go through.
That's right. So, he's dammed up the river, created Gatun Lake.
Yeah.
Ships going toward the Pacific, going to enter at Limon Bay in the Caribbean. go through a couple of locks upward, and just, it's like walking up steps, basically.
Yeah.
Except it's a big boat and it's done with water.
Yeah.
And then they navigate through that lake for a little while and then go toward Panama City through another series of locks and down, down, down over the mountains. And boom, you are connected to the rest of the world.
Right. So when they agreed on the lock method, they had one other thing to handle. And
I wonder
that
if that's why the Scottish, maybe they were getting confused with locks meaning lakes.
Right.
Maybe that's why they never got on the
ground. A bunch of locks. They're like, where are all the locks? They're like, they're right there. They're like, no, but where are the locks?
Wah, wah.
So there was one other big problem that had leveled the French effort, which was yellow fever.
Yeah.
Which you can be immune to if you're exposed to it in childhood. But if you're from New York,
yeah,
you're not. So you go down to Panama and you are stung by a mosquito and you die. The thing is, nobody knew that it was mosquitoes until a guy named Ronald Ross in 1897 studied mosquitoes in India and found malaria present in their stomachs and that it was transmittable through their saliva.
Yeah, they didn't know what it was. There were all sorts of different theories.
Yeah, they thought it was maybe from unclean living.
Yeah.
Whatever. When they found out that it was the mosquitoes, that changed everything. So they instituted this really rigid anti-mosquito program.
They cleaned up the country, basically.
And basically came close to eradicating yellow fever in the area, which paved the way for this lock system to be built.
Yeah, and you can thank Colonel William Gorgas for heading up that sanitation squad. And, it worked, and that was the key, because you can't have your workers dropping dead of yellow fever every day.
Right. They have to drop dead of landslides.
Yeah, even though a lot of these workers were, you know, poor black people. I think 85% of the people that died were black.
Yeah.
And a lot of people still died, but it wasn't like the 22,000 dropping dead from yellow fever.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But it was still a very dangerous project.
Yeah.
Mudslides, all sorts of drownings, things like that.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
So we've got the yellow fever licked. We've settled on the lock system.
Yeah.
And John Frank Stevens is replaced by a guy named Lieutenant Colonel George Washington Goethals. And he was a lock expert. And he looked at the plan and he said, you know what? We're going to divide this up into 3 sections.
That makes perfect sense.
It does. You've got the Pacific section that's going to be working from Limon Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, means lime in Spanish. Did you know that?
I did not.
So they're working from Limon Bay to the newly created Lake Gatun.
Yeah, that was the Atlantic Division, yeah.
Oh, okay, you're right. So yeah. The Atlantic Division is synonymous with the Caribbean.
Yes.
And then, so you've got the Atlantic Division working from Gatun to, or Limon to Gatun. You have the Central Division. Mm-hmm. This is the hardest part.
Yeah.
They're working in Lake Gatun to basically create a channel through this continental divide.
Yeah.
You don't have to cut sea level, but you do need to make sure these ships aren't going to, like, run aground on a mountain.
Sure.
And then you have the Pacific Division, which is working from the end of the continental divide pass, which is Pedro Miguel locks, down to the Pacific. Right?
That's right. And, like we said, the railway, the Panamanian Railroad is there. And we had, like, awesome gear at the time. It was no longer, you know, men with chisels and sledgehammers and stuff. It was steam shovels, rock drills, dynamite. And they moved 96 million cubic yards of earth and rock.
Right, which is 73 million cubic meters.
So, that's right. And it was really hot, though, and it was a pretty bad scene, and they called that Hell's Gorge, and it was dangerous, and that's where I think most of the lives were lost on this second pass.
Yeah, and that was definitely the hardest work, but they made it through. And by 1914, a crane that was used in the construction of the Panama Canal was the first thing to ever make it through all the way.
Yeah, and they were like, sweet!
Yeah, and 8 months later, it was open for business, as far as I understand.
Yeah, big business. Should we walk people through, or I guess swim people through?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay. You approach from the Atlantic. You go through the Gatun Locks. It's going to lift your vessel up 85 feet.
Yes.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And take you to Gatun Lake. Very nice there. You're going to wind through that channel for about 23 miles, then enter the Gallard Cut, about 8 miles through there, and you're going to reach the Pedro Miguel Locks, and then they're going to lower your ship about 30 feet to the Miraflores Lake. You're going to pass through this. It's about a mile long. And then the two-step Miraflores Locks are going to return you finally back to sea level. It's a seven-mile passage from there to the Pacific. And all told, you've gone 50 miles in about 8 to 10 hours.
Yeah. And mind-bogglingly, I saw that it takes 52 million gallons of fresh water to move a ship from one end to the other.
Wow.
52 million. And they're getting all that from Lake Gatun.
Yeah, and it's just, I imagine it's just recycled back into the system, right?
No.
What is it? What happens to it?
They lose most of it. It's either pumped back in, it either flows back into Lake Gatun, or else it flows out into the oceans.
Oh, okay.
Which is not necessarily good. They're worried that Lake Gatun may become brackish.
Oh, yeah?
And Lake Gatun is now the freshwater supply of Panama, and they're using a lot of it up.
Yeah, well, it's always presented a bit of an environmental quagmire.
Right.
Especially with their plans to expand, which we'll get to. But right now they have two-way traffic. They're looking to make that a three-lane highway.
Which would actually, adding that third lane, will double the amount of traffic.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. You would think it would increase it by a third.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's wider.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe it allows for two ships at a time
or something. They just jam like eight in there at once.
I don't know. I do know that if you are a large enough ship, they don't let you drive yourself because, you know, you got one drunk sea captain and all of a sudden your locks are out of commission.
Right.
So they use electric towing locomotives to tow those big bad boys.
Right. And we should say just briefly with the locks, if you want to move a ship upward, you flow into a lock. The lock closes behind you, and it fills up with water so that you can float over the lip of the next higher lock. The gate closes behind you with that one, and it fills in with water and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's remarkably basic.
Yeah, and then the opposite takes place when you're stepping down.
Yeah.
It's just basically going into a little square pool, raising or lowering the water level so you can go up or down. It's really neat.
Yeah, and if you've got a minute and a half to kill, you can take this voyage in high speed on the YouTube.
So, like we said, the U.S. used gunboat diplomacy and I guess good old-fashioned, old-timey 1902 swindling to gain control of the Panama Canal Zone. And it had complete control until 1979 when Jimmy Carter, Malaise Forever, right? Did you ever see that Simpsons? They unveil a statue of Jimmy Carter and it says Malaise Forever on the base. And one of the townspeople goes, he's history's greatest monster.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, Carter negotiated with the leader of Panama at the time, General Omar Torrijos Herrera, and said, hey, how would you like this thing back? Give us 20 years.
I think they said, hey, we'd like this back.
I like to think of American magnanimousness.
Okay. Right? Sure. So we said, you know what? We've had it for this long.
Plus, we're talking Carter. It's entirely possible. He just started contacting people and said, what does the U.S. have that we can sell?
Yeah.
Or give back?
That's a good point.
He sold like one of the presidential yacht was sold by him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why? Because he thought it was frivolous?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And Panama Canal. He's like, how about this? Let's get rid of a significant portion of our economy. Anyway, he gives it back after 20 years. And on December 31st, 1999, which is why I suspect they made it a 20-year deal.
Yeah, I mean, they had to transition. You can't just hand the keys over and be like, all right, send your crew in.
Right, but not only that, like, why not a 15-year deal or an 18-year deal or a 10-year deal? They went with 20 because it was going to end on December 31st, 1999.
Oh, a new millennium. The whole
yeah.
Thing. Oh, actually, that didn't start till 2001, though, right?
Yeah, but, you know.
Okay. So it's symbolic.
Right.
Okay.
So the Panamanians take over.
Yeah.
And immediately start taking flack because the thing's aging. Traffic's jammed up.
Yeah. They've done a good job with it, though. It's just by nature of how things are these days.
They're victims of circumstances.
Yeah.
And 5% of the world's trade goes through the Panama Canal.
We sold them a lemon of a canal.
Right. The millionth ship went through in 2010. 144,000 ships go through a year. And it's a very narrow little strip.
Yeah. You know what that means. Waiting in line.
A lot of waiting in line. Plus, also, there's an upper limit to the size ship that can go through. It's called Panamax.
Yeah.
Is the ship size. That's
I've
the
never
maximum.
Heard of that. Yeah. What a great name for the biggest ship that, you know, Panamax. What could be bigger than that?
Well, these ships that are called post-Panamax.
Exactly.
A lot of shippers are like, you know what? I'm tired of waiting. It's actually going to be more economical for me to build a ship that can't go through the Panama Canal, but can hold a lot more. And I'll just sail around the lower part of South America.
Yeah.
And that's kind of increasingly happening. Plus, Nicaragua threatened to open their own canal. So Panama says, okay, wait. Let's hold a referendum and see if we can expand this thing and modernize it and save the canal. And Panamanians said, yes, let's. So in 2006, they approved this third lane that's expected to be open by 2014.
Is Nicaragua still planning a canal?
I don't know. I don't know if that shot it down or not.
Well, and there's also talk now of a Northwest Passage thanks to
what some people might say is
climate change and melting ice caps. There may be a way to get there by land.
Henry Hudson is clapping in his grave.
So we'll see if that happens. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to really look into that research and, like, how real is that?
Right. Even still, the Panamanians will probably make their $5.25 billion investment back. Eventually. Although it took the U.S. a good 40 years to make $400 million back.
Yeah. I think the 1950s was when they finally broke even, huh?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And you break even by charging a toll. I don't think we even mentioned that. You obviously, like any way station or passage, you got to pay according to how much stuff you got.
Right.
And it's like, I think the record is... I looked it up. It was like 150,000 or something.
Yeah, they do it by tonnage. The thing is if you are carrying a lot of really expensive natural gas,
oh, right.
You're going to pay a lesser toll than if you're carrying a bunch of less expensive or even equally expensive coal, which isn't fair. And if you're transporting a lot of raw steel, why should you pay more? So they're trying to figure out a new toll system, especially for the newly expanded version of the canal. That takes into account the value of what's on board rather than just the weight.
Right.
So they should make a little more money that way.
Yeah. I don't know if this is still accurate, but the record that I have is $153,662.
Yeah.
And the cheapest was when a dude swam across it and he weighed like 150 pounds. And so they charged him what, like 36 cents?
Yeah. That back in 1928, Richard Halliburton.
And he swam the Panama Canal. And yeah. I guess it was some sort of publicity stunt.
I'm sure people loved doing stuff like that back then.
Yeah, but if you look at this this high-speed route on YouTube, it's pretty neat. And there's a lot of times where you're like, oh, look out for that boat. And then it turns and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of activity out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a pleasure cruise.
Well, no, and it's not one ship at a time. They have, like you said, two-way traffic. Right?
That's right.
And they try to keep them going through as efficiently as possible. And I should say also, the new locks that they have can serve about 60% of the water used. So they'll address a lot of environmental concerns, hopefully.
I got a couple of little facts here, if you're interested. The entrance to the canal on the Atlantic side is 22.5 miles west of the Pacific entrance. Which is interesting.
Okay.
Because it has a unique S shape. And then the locks themselves are 7 feet thick each. So if you're wondering how to keep out that much water, like to basically dam up the oceans,
right.
You need to do it with 7-foot thick concrete. 92% of the workforce is Panamanian right now,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty great. And that's about all I got. 60 million pounds of dynamite was used to construct this thing.
There's some nice stats, Chuck.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Cool. You got anything else, then?
No, all the rest of these are kind of boring.
Panama Canal. Forever. if you want to learn more about the Panama Canal, you can read this very good article on HowStuffWorks.com. Type in Panama Canal or Turn and Run Canal. See what happens when you do the latter. Chuck, hold on. Let's take a message break, huh? It is time for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this one listener mail about listener mail. Hey, guys. I'm currently on the 7 train heading to Queens from Manhattan after a long day of working as an auditor at a CPA firm. As usual, I'm listening to your podcast. This time it was the Death Mask episode, and you were concluding with some listener mail. In this instance, it was from Martha regarding peak oil. And I think Martha was talking about the auditing of oil reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And he says this to Martha. She was correct for the most part regarding the audit of oil reserves held by entities whose stocks may be publicly traded on the stock market. Just one thing I was so aghast by that I felt I needed to type this from my phone as I'm on the train still. The SEC does not perform any audits of its own on these companies.
Huh.
It is firms like the one I work for that audit these companies, albeit under SEC guidelines, actually PCAOB, Public Company Audit Oversight Board guidelines, if you want to get technical.
Oh, well, yeah.
The SEC may perform a type of audit, but when they do, they are usually auditing an audit firm or an audit that has already been done by an audit firm as part of some kind of investigation.
What?
So they'll audit an audit like the SEC doesn't audit themselves.
I got you.
That's the long and short of it. I said audit 12 times.
Right.
I've actually been through one of these audits, and it is no fun at all. For some reason, it seems everyone whom works at the SEC is what you stereotypically picture as an accountant with no humor.
Plus, the word audit loses all meaning when you hear it.
That's right. I digress, though, guys. If you pull up a 10-K annual filing for any public company, you can see in the audit opinion the audit firm which performed the audit for that particular year. Hope that clears things up, Henry Gomez. And Henry, I'm not sure if that cleared it up, but if I was an accountant, I would probably say yes, it very much cleared things up.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Henry. That was very nice of you to correct somebody who was correcting us.
Yeah, and I'm sorry you got to take that stinky 7 train. Man.
Is that a terrible train?
No, dude, that one's like, it's the old red train that looks like it's about to fall off.
It's like the midnight meat train?
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
No.
Man.
What's midnight meat? That's a...
midnight meat train. It's got Vinnie Jones and Bradley Cooper in it. It's actually based on a Clive Barker short story.
Oh, because that's an old joke between me and my friend PJ, who you've met, I believe.
Yeah.
He, at cookouts, famously, PJ's a great chef, home chef.
Mm-hmm.
But he was... so he would typically take so long, we referred to his meals as midnight meat. And then I made a joke about cold cooking a steak one time.
Nice.
It took like 24 hours.
Yeah, no, this is different.
Okay.
This was not a slam on PJ.
No, we love the midnight meat.
If you have anything you want us to know, if you want to correct somebody who's corrected us, or you just want to say hi, whatever, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com. And Chuck, they can always find us on our website, right?
That's right. StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, Netflix streams TV shows and movies directly to your TV, computer, wireless device, or game console. You can get a 30-day free trial membership. Go to www.netflix.com/stuff and sign up now.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.